Hi, and welcome to the Finally Pregnant podcast, the podcast for people who are finally pregnant after infertility and loss. I'm your host, Kat Strawbridge, and after almost 7 years trying, multiple rounds of fertility treatment, which sadly included pregnancy loss, last year I was finally pregnant, and now I'm finally parenting my gorgeous daughter, Ren. Hi there, how are you doing? Thank you so much for the feedback on last week's episode. It really makes my heart sing whenever I receive a comment or a DM or an email. So thank you so, so, so much. I really want this podcast to reach as many people as possible. And to do that, I need your help. So please make sure that you subscribe, rate and review it wherever you listen to it. And I think the most important one is Apple. And you don't have to listen to your podcast on Apple in order to review it there. That was something that I thought was the case, but turns out it isn't. So head over there. If you would do, I'd really appreciate it. And leave a review so that other people can find it. I'm also really pleased to tell you that this episode has been sponsored by the lovely people at Peanut. Peanut is a free app that has over 1 million members. And the mission of the founder, Michelle Kennedy, when she set it up, was that no one should have to navigate womanhood alone, especially the hard parts. It was initially created for mums, and I first downloaded Peanut after having Ren, because you can look for mums in your local area and connect, or you can check out some of the message boards or ask questions yourself. However, Peanut has recently expanded their community to women who are trying to conceive. Peanut's aim is to shine a light on these struggles and provide a place where you can share experiences, receive compassionate support, and build a community. Thank you so much to Peanut for believing in this podcast and sponsoring this episode. I was going to tell you a bit about my week with Ren in this bit, because it's been a pretty big one. We've started working on her going to sleep on her own in her cot, and she started nursery, which is a real biggie, I've got to be honest. However, as I listened to the unedited recording of this interview you're about to hear, I was really struck by something, and I knew that I needed to talk about that instead. I knew at the time of recording I wasn't really at the top of my game. Ren was 3 months old, so I was only just coming out of the fourth trimester. And I actually felt quite nervous afterwards because I just wasn't sure of the impression that I'd left. And yeah, it didn't feel good to me, unfortunately. Even though listening back, I don't think it's too bad. I hope you'll agree. However, I could really hear myself thinking about the questions that I was asking, and there were lots of gaps, and I lost my train of thought several times, which, you know, it happens to the best of us, don't get me wrong, but it happened more than it would in a normal conversation. I've edited all that out because you don't need to hear it. You've got better things to do with your time. However, I really wanted to share it with you because I just wanted to be really honest with you about it. Going back to work after having a little one is tough. It's completely doable, don't get me wrong, and people do it every single day, but we really need to make sure that we're gentle with ourselves around it. I know in the UK, we can take up to a year off and walk into the same job again, which is fantastic. And I would say, and this is just me, that at 7 months, now I'm starting to feel more like myself again, like properly. And with Ren going into her own room, that has definitely had a bit of an impact on that too. But I also know that in other places, for example, the US, maternity leave can be a matter of weeks. It's always going to be a wrench leaving our little ones. And I believe that in the early days of postnatal living, we kind of live in a bit of a fog. And it takes a while for that to lift. So the earlier we go back to work, the more likelihood that some of that fog is still lingering around. So just if that's something that's going to affect you in the coming weeks, or recently you've gone back to work, just, I would say, be gentle with yourself. The good thing is, I didn't plan this, but I think it totally works as a link. My guest today has an amazing podcast which should definitely be able to help you with this. Zoe Blasky is the founder of Motherkind. She's a transformational coach, and she also runs, as I said, the podcast, which I thoroughly enjoy. Zoe has a daughter called Jessie, and when we spoke to her, she was pregnant with her second, and she's now welcomed daughter Rose into the world. However, between Jessie and Rose, her and her husband Guy experienced 2 miscarriages, and we talk about how she uses everything she has learned over the years to really try and deal with the grief around those losses so that she can move forward and welcome her next pregnancy. Before I hand you over, though, I have something that I want to tell you. It's really exciting. I hope you'll agree, although I do feel really nervous telling you this. The response to this podcast has been so positive, and I genuinely can't thank you enough. It has also meant that I have lots of people contacting me to tell me about their positive pregnancy tests before they even tell family. And it's such an honour. So please keep them coming. And I also get asked lots of questions. I love it, but at times I found it difficult to keep on top of everything. And it really upsets me to think that I'm letting you down by not coming back to you straight away. Because I know there isn't anywhere else that you can get support for pregnancy after infertility and loss. So, with this in mind, I've decided to create somewhere, and it should be going live in the next few weeks. I'll be sharing more about this over on my Instagram, at Trying Years, and in future podcast episodes, but I couldn't, now that I've decided to go ahead, I couldn't not share it with you. Ooh! I hope it's something that excites you too, because I'm really looking forward to it, and I'm really looking forward to welcoming lots of you into that community so that you have somewhere that you just feel really, really supported. That's all for that for now. I am going to hand you over to the chat that I had with Zoe. I really hope you enjoy, and I really look forward to hearing from you. Take care. Bye. Hi there, Zoe. Thank you so, so much for joining me. I really, really appreciate you taking some time out of your day.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
How are you feeling?
In this moment, I feel good. I feel quite energised. I've had a good day so far. Sun is shining right now. So, yeah, I feel good.
The sun shining makes a huge difference, doesn't it?
Yeah. How are you doing?
I'm good. I am juggling, childcare and recording, which is all good. So my mum's here. And as I just said to you, she's looking after Ren at the moment, and she did clean my bathroom, which was amazing. very handy. I'm really well. I'm excited to get this second series recorded. So I started recording this week. One of the reasons that I wanted to talk to you, Zoe, is because recently I've come across your own podcast called Motherkind. And I'm getting out for an hour's walk a day with Ren, and I'm learning so much from you and your whole mantra about kind of motherhood and well-being and reconnecting back with yourself as a mother and how, you know, that can help your parenting. And through that, the listening to your podcast, I also learned that you had suffered two miscarriages and you are currently pregnant. And so a lot of what you're going to talk about comes from a place that so many of us who are listening, and for myself as well, really resonate. So I just wanted to talk to you, I suppose, initially about your podcast. And it's in, and I should also say that you do have a lovely daughter called Jessie, don't you?
I do. She's nearly four.
Nearly four. So this is your second that you're currently pregnant with.
Yep.
Yeah. And you're 30 weeks. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah. Just 30 weeks. Yeah.
Just 30 weeks. Exciting. Lovely. Oh, I love it. Honestly, I just think, oh, I want to be pregnant again, even though it was stressful. I loved it. So if you could tell us a bit about like who you are, what you do and your podcast and things and like how it came about or why it came about, I suppose, that would be amazing.
Yeah, so I am a transformational coach. I was trained in coaching for a long, long, long time, but I didn't start doing it until I became a mum. Because I've been on a big sort of inner journey, personal development. So I had a breakdown when I was 23. I was really young, but I was super lucky because I got into recovery. I really got into therapy, into self-development and healing work, and really started to change my life and change my relationship with myself in big ways. So I used to, have a really terrible relationship with myself, sort of self-hate really, and lots of unhelpful behaviors as a result of that place. And I got myself to a place of feeling really good about myself and life. And I was really into well-being and the well-being world. And I was always going on trainings and meditation retreats and yoga retreats and, all the talks in London. And when I became a mum, I just assumed that there would be a conversation on that level about motherhood. So I just started looking for it and I didn't find anything. I found loads of things about what to wear. I found loads of things about business, like mother's meetings and But I couldn't find anything really talking about a deeper conversation around motherhood, around what can happen to us emotionally, about triggers from our past, about what can come up around control and perfectionism. And, you know, suddenly the dynamics with everyone in our lives change. And I just couldn't find a conversation about it. So I was chatting to a friend who also happened to be a coach, Lucy Sheridan, who is the comparison coach.
And she spoke at one of our events recently, actually.
Oh, she did. She did.
Yeah.
And she said, well, I think you have to create this. And I was like, what? I don't want to really create this. And she said, well, you have to. Not quite like that, but she really cheerleaded me. And then she coached me to help me set Motherkind up. So Motherkind is really about holding a deeper conversation. So on the podcast, we have incredible world-leading well-being thinkers. I'm not so into getting people who's just had a personal experience. I'm really about sharing the expert view. So I've had Marianne Williamson, who's like one of the world-leading spiritual thinkers. Had Dr. Gabor Mate, who's probably the world's leading expert on human development. I've had such a range of coaches, therapists, yoga teachers, all really helping us look within a bit and see how we might make ourselves happier, freer, more joyful, because what I believe and what we know to be true really is that children really model what they see in us mothers. They don't really copy what we tell them to do. Or, you know, so if we want happy children, content children who feel emotionally stable, then really we have to model that. So yeah, it's really about helping mums work through some challenges that they might have to being the sort of model that they might want to be.
And that is, you know, when you talk and you talk about your breakdown, you know, when you were younger and all of the complexities that come with that, you know, in my mind, I'm thinking about people who are trying to conceive and everything that happens there. You know, the stats around that are that over 90% of people feel depressive when they're going through the fertility journey. 42% say that they felt suicidal. You know, there is so much depression, anxiety, stress, heartbreak, yeah, sadness that comes with that. And I know that I've certainly suffered some of that, and I wouldn't classify what I had as a breakdown, but I certainly had those days where I just couldn't get out of bed for a period of time. I'm really grateful that we had builders in our house almost, even though it was awful at the time. It meant that I had to actually get dressed. And then you find yourself pregnant, and then you find yourself a mother, and you're dealing with all of that really, because, and I think that's where the link, you know, why there is a kind of a closer link with fertility treatment and pregnancies and postnatal depression, which, you know, isn't always the case. And I went to a counsellor while I was pregnant, and, you know, she said it might not happen. It doesn't happen to everyone. And I was like, oh, I really needed to hear that, because I had almost convinced myself that it was going to happen, and it hasn't happened. And I think because I have prepared myself has been kind of really fortunate, and this podcast has definitely helped me with that. But I, you know, I think you're thrown into being a mother, whatever your background is, and it's really hard. And you're kind of working out how to feed, whatever kind of process that is. You're working out how to deal with sleep deprivation. You're working out how to keep the house running because this brings me back to one of your podcasts about contracts. And, mm-hmm. I had the conversation with my husband. I never signed the contract that I would become a housewife and do all the cleaning and cooking, you know, but you find yourself in that position, don't you? And, you know, where are you in all of that? And I think that's where your podcast has really spoken to me, especially because of the TTC background, because we do need to remember who we are and get back to that and look after ourselves, because we've been through a hell of a lot. So, you know, I really praise your podcast a lot. And the first one I found was How to Become Parents and Stay Happy in Your Relationship with Carolyn Cowan. And it was just, I wanted to get home, and I haven't had time, sadly, which is the problem. And I suppose I should address that, but to get home and re-listen to it again and make loads of notes, you know, because it was just incredible. It wasn't just about my relationship with Bob, actually. It was about my relationship with Ren and myself. You know, there was so much content in there. I would highly recommend it. So what are the top things that you have learned, do you think? Like, what are your top takeaways from must be really hard from everyone that you've interviewed. What comes up, I guess, time and time again?
I mean, I speak to such a range of people, but what tends to come up time and time again are a couple of things, actually. One is having an awareness that when we become mothers, it can be a real trigger for lots of our emotional challenges to come to the surface. Now, I think it's a really hard thing. I think it's a really good thing if we've got the support around us, hence what I'm trying to do with Motherkind. So this is something that Carolyn said on the episode that you just referenced that you loved so much. She said, you know, because I was talking about my pregnancy and some stuff that's coming up for me, and she said, well, my belief is that, you know, our children, whether they're, you know, in our bodies or our arms or they're in our imaginations, you know, bring up what they want us to heal. So I think that is one thing that comes up time and time and time again, is that, you know, it's not talked about enough. It's really not talked about enough that any traumas or emotional challenges, relationship with yourself, coping tools, you know, so things like numbing behaviors, perfectionist behaviors, people pleasing, controlling, can all come to the surface when we become a mum. And I want everyone to know how normal that is and that what to do about it. And my podcast is a great place to start.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing that I've learned, I knew this instinctively because of my own experience with my own mother and father, who were amazing parents, but they were emotionally children. They hadn't done any inner work. They were replaying lots of their own histories. Is that really what we don't repair, we repeat. So if we want to create a different blueprint, which is a word that I talk about a lot, for our own children, there may be things that we absolutely want to take from our parents and our own family sort of family tree, but there may be things that we want to change. And if we want to change those things, we have to become aware of what they are and work on changing them. Because we know, this isn't me saying this, we know now that that's how generational patterning works. That's something I feel really passionate about, because I think, again, in America, it's a different conversation. This conversation is far more advanced than here. But here, we don't tend to talk about that so much. Philippa Perry has a book out called The Book You Wish Your Parents Had Read, and that talks about it brilliantly in there. And there are many others, and I've had lots of people on the podcast talking about it. And I think the third thing that comes up time and time again, and what I really learned, is around self-care. So I think that's become a label that is misused. I think people think of bubble baths and nails. For me, self-care is really showing up as an adult, you know, being on top of my behaviors, showing up as the person that I want to be so that I can be the best mother that I want to be. And ultimately, if I'm not engaging in that type of behavior, then I'm teaching Jessie that I'm not important. So what she will infer is that she's not important. So if I want my daughter to think that she is valued and worthy and important, I have to show her that I think I am. So I have zero guilt engaging in, you know, I go to therapy, I go out in the evenings to some recovery meetings, I do loads of yoga. I have zero guilt because I know that the message that she's taking is that we have to look after ourselves. And actually, we can only look after ourselves, really.
Yeah.
So three sort of big messages and deep messages, but this is what Motherkind is about. I'm not really into the sort of surface level stuff. I'm quite a deep thinker and a deep person, and I like getting to the root of things. So I think those three things really come up time and time and time again with all of these amazing guests that I have.
Give me a self-help book and I will read the first three pages, and I just can't do it. I've decided the next time I think I want to buy a self-help book, I'm going to listen to the audio instead. Maybe it'll go in differently. But listening to your podcasts, that's how I get it. And like, I'm getting it from people that I trust are at the top of their game, because you've picked them, because I know how into this you are, you know, or how kind of just how you live this. You know, and I really get that you live this through your life. It's not just the podcast. These are the people you listen to. These are the people actually that you've listened to and read about and been to see talk for years.
So people say to me, like, oh, how do you read all these books and go to all these talks? And I'm like, what you don't get is that I was doing this for 12 years anyway. I'm just talking about it now. In a way, it's like a total joy because I was doing all this for myself. And even if the podcast stopped tomorrow, I would continue to read all the books of the guests that I have on, because they're a lot of the people that, you know, I respect most in the world. So it's been I'm not that sort of like, I'm definitely not doing it because I think it's trendy, or, you know, it's so integral to me. You know, I was 23 when I started on this path and I'm 36 now. So it's been a while. But it's just struck a nerve with both, you know, the guests that I have on, which is why I think I get the guests that I do, because people get it, and there isn't really that many places holding the conversation yet. And why I think it's grown so quickly is because it's just striking a nerve with people that there is a yearning for this slightly deeper conversation, particularly against the backdrop of, you know, some quite surface level things around motherhood, which is great. I'm, you know, it's brilliant. I engage in all that stuff. But talking about the problem all the time isn't going to change anything. And that's what I see quite a lot of.
And I guess what I would say is, you know, if you don't consider yourself kind of well read in that area, as I'm not, I think it's fascinating. And I've taken so much from the episodes that I've listened to. And I know that there's, you know, many more that I can do as well.
Good. Well, what I try to do is take really complex things. So I did an economics degree, but I was basically dyslexic. I don't know why I was. I mean, that was part of one of my coping tools was that I didn't know myself, and I was a massive people pleaser. So that's how I ended up doing a degree that was utterly unsuited to me. But it was brilliant because I got this skill where I was able to take all these complex things that I really didn't understand, and I had to make them really simple for myself. So what I try to do is use that skill. So I'll take someone like Carolyn, who is a really, you know, she's been a psychosexual therapist for 25 years. But when I interview her, I try and make it really simple and practical and applicable. And we don't talk about jargon. I always say, what does that really mean? Can you give an example? And I think that's what people love, as opposed to like reading some of the books that can be overwhelming.
Yeah.
Is I'm always trying to make it, really break it down and keep it simple, because we don't have time, you know, to be doing 100-point plans and, you know, all this type of thing. But to spark a few little ideas or questions in someone's mind, that's enough for me. That's brilliant. If someone's like, oh, I wonder, you know, if that might apply to me or how I might use that.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that can be really difficult, and even I know with this with my podcast, is that people, when you get pregnant after infertility and loss, you can't believe it necessarily, and you don't want to jinx things, even though you know that jinxing, you know, isn't a thing. It's still, you don't want to jinx it. And so I started listening to your podcast after I had Ren, and it's only in the last, honestly, it is only in the last 2 or 3 weeks, because I was frightened to listen to motherhood things before. You know, and even when I was pregnant, I was still dealing with, and actually I ended up making a podcast rather than necessarily listening to them for the last kind of trimester. But you don't want to listen to things too early because you're scared of jinxing things. I know people listening, you know, to my podcast, to this episode, they might have waited until a bit later, or if they're feeling really brave, they might listen earlier on. And that's okay. Listening to this podcast is not going to affect your pregnancy. I can pretty much guarantee that. What would be amazing, and what I would love to say to people, is to listen to your podcast while you're pregnant or earlier, you know, as you're preparing, because there's so much that you can learn, I think, beforehand, and trying to get it all in afterwards is so difficult. But that's just a bit of an advert, I suppose, really, is what I'm trying to say. There isn't really a question in there. It's just, you know, go and have a listen to a couple, because it can teach you so much about, you know, motherhood. And then when you're ready, once your little one has arrived, then, you know, just binge listen to all of the rest of them through those nights, especially at the beginning, because it will give you a bit of sanity.
But I think it's like anything in life, isn't it? You know, when something's meant to come in your path, it will.
Yes.
So yeah. I think there's never a need to sort of, you know, push things or, you know, like if someone's meant to, that, often people say that to me, like, I found your podcast in the weirdest way. And I'm like, well, that's obviously because you're meant to hear this stuff now. And it's not for everyone. Like, it's really not, because they are quite deep conversations. It's not about makeup and hair and clothes and buggies and, you know, bottles and, you know, breastfeeding. It's not about that. It's about something far deeper. So yeah, if someone feels like called to check it out, I'd say check it out, but go with that, go with your gut. Like if you think, oh, this isn't for me, I always encourage people to go with that. You know, I really believe we're meant to find stuff when we're meant to find it. I know that was my experience, like books falling off shelves and all that weird sort of stuff happens to me all the time as I'm meant to find something. So yeah, maybe someone listening to this is meant to hear about Motherkind, or maybe not, you know.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And you know, I just picked on one randomly and it spoke to me. So I agree, you know.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And that is exactly what I'm talking about. And that happens to me all the time with other podcasts. And sometimes I'm like, how did I even find myself on this podcast? And it'll introduce me to a new topic that'll be perfect for me right then. There's definitely like you know, I think something bigger at play guiding us to these different resources.
I agree. I had an experience with Elizabeth Day and her podcast, and the first one I downloaded was, and it was completely by chance, I don't even think I read the whole title, but it was where she was being interviewed, similar to your episode 50. Yeah. And I learned that she had had IVF and she had had miscarriages, and you know, and it's like, wow, out of all of the episodes I could have picked, it was that one. So then there was an instant kind of bond there, which made me want to definitely listen to more. Whereas if I'd listened to her talking to someone else, it might not have spoken to me quite so much. It is amazing. I totally agree with that.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. I think we can all just relax and just trust that things will get put in our way as we're meant to find these resources. That's my experience anyway.
Relax is such an interesting word. Dr. Hillary told me to relax. I ended up appearing on just around fertility. Well, it's such a relax. But in this context, I think it is completely...
In this context, well, things will find you, exactly. No, I'm good friends with Emma Cannon, and she always talks about Relaxgate.
Yes, exactly.
It's not the thing to say. In this context, I mean it in terms of...
Yeah.
Resources often will find us.
But what I've learned, and again, this is, you know, I have only listened to a handful of your podcasts, but on not the first one necessarily, but quite early on, I learned that you had a daughter, Jessie, and but then you had gone through two miscarriages and that you're now currently pregnant.
Yes.
And so I had already been thinking, I want this lady on my podcast. I want her to introduce her podcast and her thinking and the whole, you know, really reconnecting with yourself as a mother, because that's so important, I think. And we do a lot of that when we're trying to conceive, but I think it's a reminder to do that once we're parents as well. I think there's a lot of guilt around, you know, it can be hard being a parent, it can be hard being a mother, and when you've tried to conceive for any length of time and then you feel guilty for feeling like it's hard, you know, it should all be roses, and you know, it's not, it doesn't matter, it just isn't, some of it's just really fucking hard, you know, and that's, you're allowed to say that. But then hearing that you had gone through your own kind of loss, I just want to talk to you really about your personal experience with that, if that's okay.
Yeah.
And you, well, I don't know, do you want to tell me about it and tell me about your pregnancy now, and has that affected your pregnancy now?
At the start it did. So I had two miscarriages, both at 7 weeks. So quite early, but we knew that the first one was going to happen because we'd had an early scan and there was no heartbeat. Well, we suspected that it was going to happen. And I actually miscarried on holiday. Yeah, it was pretty traumatic because we were in Norway and it was just Guy and I for his 40th birthday weekend. And I'd taken him to there's this amazing hotel where a movie Ex Machina is filmed, and it's in a glass box, basically in a forest on our own. and I miscarried. So that was really quite traumatic because I didn't know what to expect. I've never had a miscarriage before. There was a lot. There was a lot more than I'd ever imagined. I was fainting a lot. It was very scary for Guy. We had no medical support. And then came home and, you know, got support both from doctors and Emma, my friend at McCannon. I saw her. She's an acupuncturist, but really so much more. So she was sort of supporting me holistically. And I did a lot of work with my therapist. My therapist is a somatic therapist, which means that we hold a lot of our feelings and our emotions in our body. So I worked through a lot with her about the miscarriage, and we did a lot of somatic healing work. And then about, wasn't long after, maybe 7 weeks later, I got pregnant again. And I'm really good at keeping things in the day. So I actually felt quite calm about that pregnancy. I felt quite fatalistic about the whole thing, if I'm honest, which I know does not work for everyone, but I felt like, you know, if these babies are meant to be my babies, then, you know, they will be. So my anxiety was pretty good, and I felt quite calm. But then, unfortunately, we found out again that wasn't going to be a viable pregnancy. But again, we were going on holiday. It sounds like we go on holiday the whole time. We don't. It was just like this period where we were traveling a bit. And we were going on a long flight with Jesse. And I said, I don't really want to risk miscarrying on a plane, given that it had been quite hard on my body before and I had been fainting. And so I went and had the operation, the little D&C. Mm-hmm. And actually, that was handled really, really well. And really sensitively. And again, you know, I did lots of work around saying goodbye. And I wrote lots of letters to that little, you know, that little soul. And I felt pretty healed. I felt very supported by my husband. He actually didn't handle it as well as I did. Mm-hmm. His grieving was... I was going to say messier, but that's not the right word. He grieved in quite a different way to me. I have a lot of support, so I see a lot of people. I was seeing 3 or 4 different sort of practitioners about it, whereas my husband does have a therapist, but he was grieving quite differently to me.
How long later was it that you got pregnant with this pregnancy?
That's what I was just thinking about. I was just thinking about that. So we got, that was in December, about 3 or 4 months.
Okay.
Yeah, so I went to see an amazing nutritional therapist called Henrietta Norton, who runs Wild Nutrition, which is also a supplement brand.
I love Wild Nutrition. Yeah, I've used them all the way through, yeah.
Yeah, I use all the way through. I went to see Henrietta, and she said, listen, I think you need to take... you know, at least 3 or 4 months. And there were some things that I needed to sort out with my diet, some D vitamins and some iron issues, because I became quite anemic after the miscarriages. Mm-hmm. So I just took 3 months. And what I really did was slow down. I really slowed down. I realized that actually there wasn't space in my life for another baby. Every minute of my day was like scheduled. Even if it was scheduled as like meditation time, it was scheduled. I really worked hard from sort of December until March, and this baby was conceived in March. I really worked hard on just slowing everything down, creating loads more space in my life. And who knows if that had an impact? I mean, I don't know, but I think it was interesting to me that when I created space, you know, this pregnancy then came, and, you know, so far seems to be progressing really well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's so difficult, isn't it? You know, like, my infertility is unexplained, and I'm sure in 20 years time there might be an explanation, but, you know, I think with getting pregnant for anyone, but, you know, fertility treatment, I think a lot of it, you know, there is a luck, a fate thing that comes into it. We just don't necessarily, we can't pinpoint what it is that made it work, which for me, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners, kind of feeds into the anxiety a bit, because if you knew, then either you know it's fixed and so you're less stressed about the pregnancy, or, you know, you, I don't know, it's something you can work on, or, you know, kind of be conscious of. But
of course, well, the unknown is one of the biggest triggers for fear and anxiety, you know. And I was reading something that Tommy's were doing the other day, I think you
Tommy
were there
why. Yeah,
about just people not knowing, you know. I was incredibly lucky, because even though I had two losses, we got pregnant really easily. So I think, you know, when I was reflecting a bit on my experiences and talking to some other people about it, I wonder if one of the reasons why I was able to handle it, you know, relatively well, you know, I integrated the experience really well, I didn't bottle my feelings, you know, I wonder if that's because, you know, I hadn't waited 2 years or 3 years or 7 years to then, you know, to then lose at 7 weeks. I think, you know, I'm not into comparing experiences at all, but for me, I think it made it easier that we got pregnant, you know, both times really quickly. But I imagine it would be, I would have found it a lot more challenging had I waited a long time for that to then miscarry twice.
I'm very much, I'm the same with you with the whole comparison thing. And, you know, one of the things that I've said time and time again is everyone's pain is different, but everyone's pain is valid. And so, but I do, you know, I appreciate what you're saying completely, that, you know, you didn't have that long wait between, and if there were natural pregnancies. But do you think that, having, well, you said, I think already, that kind of it did affect the early part of your pregnancy. Were you more anxious at the beginning, or do you think the work that you've done in between, and, you know, and this is the work that people can do while they're pregnant as well. You know, I saw a counsellor while I was pregnant because I knew that I was feeling anxious and I knew that I was worried about things that lay ahead. So just because you haven't done it prior to being pregnant doesn't mean you shouldn't do it or can't still go out there and do it. And I love what you were talking about the holding the feelings in our body, and, you know, kind of that kind of therapy, and just releasing them. You can almost, another thing that I talk about is emotional detoxes. And, you know, I think it's, you should go and have a cry, go and feel sorry for yourself, go and lock yourself away from the world if you need to, by getting rid of those negative and sad and bad feelings.
Yeah, we have to cry. Crying's nature's way designed for us to process feelings and emotions.
Exactly.
If you're not crying, something's wrong.
Exactly. And it leaves room for the good and the positive, and, you know, that kind of thing. So I think that people should not revel in it, but that they should do that. You know, like you say, it is processing those feelings, isn't it?
Yeah, if you're able to access them. I mean, some people, you know, on my coaching side, some people are unable to access those feelings yet, and that's okay too. But for me, I did lots of feeling. And I'm lucky, you know, I've been working with the same therapist for how long? 4 years now? Yeah, since Jessie was born. So yeah, the first 7 weeks of this pregnancy, this current pregnancy, I would say I was a tiny bit detached. Looking back, I think I was sort of waiting. And, you know, I spoke to a lot of people about that, and, you know, that was just a way that I was managing my fear. There's nothing wrong with it per se. It was just a coping tool. And then when I got past the 7 weeks point, I started to feel a bit more confident in the pregnancy. And then as every week went by, I started to feel more and more confident. But like you said, I think you used the phrase, like, I live my whole life one day at a time. It's something that I gained from 12-step recovery. So I just approached it one day at a time, and I still am to some extent. I think one of the challenges that I've noticed in this pregnancy, and I talked about it the other day, is that when I was pregnant with Jessie, I really wasn't aware, if I'm honest, of things that could go wrong. I was really well informed on the positive side of birth because I had a home birth, and so I really understood everything that could go right, and I really trusted my body. And but because of Motherkind, I've had, you know, lots and lots of conversations about horrendous things that people have been through. And I noticed that I just didn't have that last time. So I've noticed that I've had to do loads of work around releasing those fears, having had that knowledge. And I think having that knowledge is a fantastic thing. It has made me so much more empathetic and compassionate to myself and others. I was definitely naive before about what could happen. I've also had a lot of friends go through, you know, immense tragedy. It's definitely made me feel more, far more compassionate. But the other flip side of that is the fears.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm really into hypnobirthing, and I'm really into meditation and affirmations, and, you know, just recognizing that those fears are there, but just trying not to let them become my, you know, dictate all of my thinking. I'm trying to hold space for, well, you know, yes, that does happen, but, you know, also this happens. And I'm finding that really helpful at the moment on just noticing that they're there. And then just keeping it one day at a time, trying to keep it really simple, and doing things that I know work, like meditation and journaling and, you know, hypnobirthing, I find really powerful. And I trained when I was pregnant with Jesse as a Kundalini yoga teacher, and Kundalini is a sort of weird type of yoga, very meditative type of yoga. So I do a lot of that as well, which is very powerful in terms of, you know, helping to calm the mind.
It's really interesting you mentioned the word fear a lot. And actually, one of the things that I got from one of your podcasts was you had said that you didn't want children or didn't think you wanted children. And that's something that I have said, you know, in the past. And it's not been thrown back in my face, but, you know, one person in particular that I've said it to kind of said it, oh, I thought you didn't want children. And I got to the point almost with my trying to conceive journey where I thought, am I just doing this because I can't have it? Like, do I actually want children? And then you get pregnant and you think, gosh, you know, and then you feel guilty, I guess, and do I deserve this if I've said that in the past? And you had said in one of your podcasts how you realized with work that you said that out of fear. And my excuse has always been, well, I say excuse, my reasoning behind it, I guess, was that I wasn't in the right relationship. So I kind of thought that they were in the future, but I couldn't see them in the relationship I was with at that point. So, but I really, a coin dropped when you said, you know, actually it was fear, and it made it easier for me. I felt less guilty about having said that, about having thought that. And I, again, I'm just saying, like, to anyone who's pregnant and might have had those thoughts, and, you know, that doesn't, it is fear, and fear seems like a less guilt creating feeling. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and also we're allowed to change our minds.
Like, very good point.
We're allowed to say, oh, I'm not sure if children's for me. And then, you know, we're such dynamic beings. You know, we are different every single day. We learn more every single day about ourselves and the world. So who I am even this time last year is really different to, you know, now I wasn't even sure that I wanted a second. And then, you know, as I grew and changed, I realised, you know, that I did. So I think we can just be much kinder to ourselves, you know, which is one of the big things that I talk about. We are allowed to change our minds. We're allowed to say children aren't for us, and we're allowed to have children. And I have some clients that will say to me, I just really don't enjoy motherhood, you know, or there are elements of it that I really hate. And that is so normal. You know, it's so normal. So I think, you know, thinking of ourselves in this sort of set way can sometimes be unhelpful. Mm-hmm. I'd like to think of myself as just really dynamic and always changing and always trying my best in every moment, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, for sure, like, the fear thing for me was really big, because I came from, you know, a long line of trauma on the female side. And I really, you know, I knew a lot about that, and I knew that I wanted to transform it. And I knew that if I became a parent, I would want things to be very different for my family. And that really scared me. And I wasn't sure if I'd done enough work. So that was where a lot of my fear came from. I thought, God, am I healed enough to bring another person into the world? Because I knew so much about you know, all of this, all the stuff that I talk about. And I still have that fear sometimes, for sure, but it is just a fear. And my sort of acronym that I use for fear is false expectations appearing real. They're just things that, you know, seem really real. Actually, when we break fear down, it's often not based in reality. And that's what I realized. I realized I'd be the best mum that I could be, and that was enough. And that sort of unlocked a part of me and unlocked, a desire to start a family with my husband.
Yeah, I love that. You mentioned earlier on about Guy, your husband, and dealing with the miscarriages, you dealt with it kind of differently. And something that I talk about often is that men and women, or actually, I suppose with fertility treatment, perhaps, I don't know, it could be not necessarily fertility treatment, but you were doing different things. Like with fertility treatment, I was the person doing the physical stuff, you know, taking the injections, having the procedures, etc. My husband was supporting me. So when we went through miscarriage, he looked after me initially through my emotional and physical recovery. And then he fell apart, if you know what I mean, once I was stronger. And do you think it's different this time round?
I'm always really cautious of talking like on the behalf of someone else.
Yes.
I actually really don't know what his internal experience has been.
Yeah, fair enough.
But his behaviour to me, so I guess my experience of his behaviour, which I can talk about because that's real to me, has been, he didn't have that slight detachment that I did to start with. And he actually has been super conscious of doing everything that we did with Jessie. So he really sweetly the other day said, come on, with Jessie at this time, you had those affirmation cards all over the house. And I've noticed that you haven't got them up. And I said, oh yeah, I just haven't. And so he, Holly DeCruz taught us hypnobirthing. So she's called the Yes Mum and she has these affirmation cards. And the next day they arrived in the post and he said, come on, let's get them up. Let's, you know, so I think he's coming from it. You know, I'm in a really different space when I had Jessie. You know, I now have this quite big business and a toddler and, you know, all sorts of things going on. So he's being really helpful and supportive in, you know, reminding me of what we did last time to prepare for, you know, birth and early parenthood. And is being sort of a great supporter in that way. Yeah, but I'm so lucky because both of us, you know, recognize the value of our emotional health. So he sees a therapist every week. I see a couple of therapists a week. So you know, really, we're not processing those raw emotions with each other. Often we'll come to each other having processed something. Or when we do come together to talk about, you know, how we're feeling, it will be in quite an adult to adult way. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really lucky in that because I'll often say to him, listen, I don't have the bandwidth. You need to go and talk to your therapist about that. And he'll sometimes say the thing, same to me. And then we will do couples therapy, like if something comes up, which it might do, you know, who knows, you know, during the rest of this pregnancy or early parenthood, we would just go and have a few sessions and work that through together. You know, my view is like, I think it's kind of crazy that we think that we can handle all these things on our own, especially if we didn't have the modeling from our parents and neither has had brilliantly emotionally available parents. So, you know, together we sort of recognize that it's just something we have to learn, just like you have to learn to drive. We just have to learn how to emotionally navigate these tricky things that happen in adult life. So I feel really like held by that because I know that nothing can really come up that we wouldn't get support with.
It sounds like you've got an amazing team around you. And it's so good to hear you say all of that because I think it's so important and something that I advocate is, you know, speaking to people, we shouldn't be looking at therapists and counsellors and things, you know, and this does come down to finances. And when you've spent like me £40,000 on having a baby, you know, you haven't necessarily got the finances to fund this all the time. But if I had an unlimited fund, I would, you know, I would see a therapist every day, you know, not every day, but every week or every, you know, regularly, because I don't like that people only do it when they're kind of in a down space. You know, I think it's something that we can help to maintain ourselves throughout. And, you know, in a relationship, you know, there are things that you do want to discuss and just vent sometimes. and this isn't about being pregnant, this is just kind of life in general, you know, with someone that isn't your other half, because it might not be about them necessarily, but you just need that space and that can help you. And if you're feeling like that during your pregnancy, and it, certainly once you become parents, that's just a really important takeaway that I hope that people would take from what you've said, because it's just, it is really important.
You know, I'm not rich by any stretch, you know, but I prioritize that in my life, because, you know, I grew up in a family where other things were prioritized: cars, holidays, clothes. And actually, to me, none of that is important. What's important is my emotional health, because that's ultimately what my family are going to model and learn from. And, you know, so I don't buy many clothes. I spend it on getting some emotional support around me, because I know I have to do that. You know, I have a mind that is wired for fear. I have a mind that is wired for anxiety and for projecting and getting myself, you know, in tears. And, you know, that's just my mind. So, you know, it's my responsibility to manage that. So I just prioritize it. Honestly, I just prioritize it, just like almost as much as, you know, food. I think, what do I need for food? What do I need, you know, for the mortgage and the bills this month? And what do I need for my, you know, my emotional support? Because it's so important. I would stop going away, and I would stop buying clothes way before I stopped my, you know, my emotional support that I pay for around me, in a heartbeat. There's no question for me. And I see, you know, it's a bit of a bugbear for me, because I see lots of people overspending on, you know, whatever, you know, the odd Zara purchases, and yet saying that they, or alcohol, buying alcohol and saying they feel anxious. You know, there's another one that I can get on a bit of a rant about. So yeah, for me, it's not about being privileged per se. It's about what's important to me.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. So, yeah, it is about prioritizing. But sometimes you just haven't got any money at all. But yeah, do you know what? We haven't got any money, and I still found money for it.
I mean, my therapist is £75 on Skype, which is a lot of money. And it is an investment, and you're absolutely right, you have to have it. But there are lots and lots and lots, particularly for mothers, there are lots of amazing charities and free resources out there that I can signpost people to, because I think there's a growing, you know, especially with the work that Kate Middleton is doing now around early childhood experiences, and we know that that impacts everything in adult life, you know, from addictions to health to, you know, so there's a, I think it, particularly, you know, off the back of lots of conversations in America, where it's really, the conversation is really moving on, there's a lot of more focus in the UK now that actually recognizing the importance of the first 7 years in a child's life. And really that comes down to many things, but a huge factor is the emotional health of the parents. So there's lots of charities, it's a long way of saying, there's lots of charities doing amazing work in this area where you can get support for free.
And that is something that is going to be amazing for the listeners, you know, when they become parents, which hopefully for many of them will be quite imminent, is that the conversations around motherhood and parenting aren't silent. Like, you know, there are still difficulties within it, don't get me wrong, I don't think it's a walk in the park, but a lot more people talk about it, and it's a lot more evident. You know, we've gone through fertility where a lot of it is about taboos and silence and people not wanting to talk out about it, and you can't identify people who are dealing with it because, you know, they just don't talk about it. Whereas when you become a mother, and I have it now experienced this, you know, you can roll your eyes at another mum, you know, you can, there are things that you can do that just, it's just, some things are just much easier because you just know and they know. And that's where, you know, and I think that people should seek out all of that. And your podcast is one of the first things that I would recommend that they do within all of that.
And that's free, and that will always be free.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's amazing. And I'm really, really grateful for you for chatting to me today. And I'm grateful.
I hope something was resonant or useful to people.
Oh, I have no doubt. And like, yeah, thank you for making your podcast, because, yeah, it speaks volumes to me. And I look forward to making my way through all of the other episodes.
Oh, good.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Zoe, and good luck
with you're so welcome.
Your pregnancy. I look forward to seeing your little one arrive with us.
Thank you.
10 weeks or so.
10 weeks, yeah, I can't believe it.
Oh, this is my favourite bit. The last trimester, yeah, was my favourite bit, I have to say. I was really able to enjoy that then.
It's a lovely time. It's a hard time, but a lovely time at the same time, isn't it? Like motherhood.
Yeah. Like everything.
Like everything in life, hard but beautiful.
Exactly. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Zoe. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. You take care. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.